Good afternoon. Let's go ahead and begin. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I, Colorado Revised Statutes. The time is 2 p.m. The date is February 3, 2010. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Blue Spruce Conference Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. The Title Setting Board today consists of the following. My name is Bill Hobbs. I'm Deputy Secretary of State, and I'm conducting the hearing on behalf of Secretary of State Bernie Busher. To my immediate left is Sharon Eubanks, Deputy Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, who is the designee of the Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, Charlie Pike. To my immediate right is Dan Domenico, Solicitor General, here on behalf of Attorney General John Southers. To my far right is Ceci Gomez of the Secretary of State's office. Let me just say, by way of procedures, how the Title Board operates. We have two measures before us today. For anyone who wishes to testify, there's sign-up sheets on the table by the door. The hearing is recorded and broadcast over the Internet on the Secretary of State's website. The procedures are basically three steps that we follow. The first step for each measure is for the board to make sure that it understands the measure. So first, I'll give an opportunity for board members to ask questions of the proponent or proponents to make sure that we understand the measure. The second step is to determine if the board has jurisdiction to set a title, and that necessarily requires us to determine if the proposed measure complies with the single subject requirement. And then third, if the board does in fact determine that it has jurisdiction, then the board will proceed to set a title for each measure, starting with a staff-prepared draft, which a copy of which for each of the measures before us is on the table by the back door. I should mention that for each measure, there's really two titles. There's the title in the form of a statement and the title in the form of a question. We typically work from the language of just the title with the understanding that any changes we make to the staff draft with respect to the title will also be made in the other title that's in the form of a question. We are not concerned with the merits of any proposal. We don't discuss the merits or take testimony on the merits of any proposal. A decision is reached by two of the three members of the board, and anyone who is dissatisfied with a decision of the title board may file a motion for rehearing with the Secretary of State within 7 calendar days. So with that, I'll turn to the first agenda item, 2009-2010, number 37, Global Day Without Violence. Are there any questions for Mr. Pink is here. Any questions for Mr. Pink about the measure? Thank you. Then I'll go ahead and turn to the question of single subject. Any discussion about single subject? You know, I'll note that this is very similar to number one, and which also called for a global day without violence, and the board did set titles, found that it was a single subject. As far as I know, there is a single subject. So I guess I'll go ahead and make a motion that the board find that there is a single subject and proceed to set a title.
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff draft. Mr. Pink, have you had a chance to look at the staff draft?
Yes, I have, sir. Thank you.
Hold on just one moment. Let me finish. I would like to know if you have any comments on the staff draft. Also, would you introduce yourself for the record, please?
Yes, sir. My name is Paige Pink. I'm the proponent for Proposition 37, 2010. My only comment is that I believe under the recent Supreme Court ruling of Citizens United concerning corporate speech, that if corporations have an absolute right to First Amendment speech, I do too, and I think that gives me the authority to ask you to put Article 30 into the staff drafts. Shall there be an amendment to Article 30 of the Colorado Constitution concerning a call for a global day without violence on January 1st of each year? And that's the only comment I have.
Okay. So your proposal is after the word an amendment, you would insert to Article 30, to Article 30 of the Colorado Constitution? Is that?
Yes, sir. And, I'd also like the shall there be, I'd like it to read, shall there be, yes, an amendment. Well, I just want concerning a call for a global day without violence to be at the front, as far to the front as possible. And if you can add the Article 30, that's great. But I object to the way it's written now. And that's my comment. Thank you.
May I ask, right now there is not an Article 30. Is that correct?
Well, that's correct.
I'm a little concerned about saying an amendment to Article 30. The measure.
I'm sorry, through Article 30, not to Article 30.
Oh, okay.
Through
Article 30. Okay. Any discussion by the board?
I suggest that we add that language just as it is in the measure itself.
I'm sorry, sir, are you proposing that the staff draft be adopted?
No, I'm suggesting that we accept your suggestion and add the language through Article 30 in the same place it is in your measure, which would mean it would just read an amendment to the Colorado Constitution through Article 30 calling concerning a call for a global day without violence each January 1st. Yes.
That makes sense to me. That's consistent with the language of the measure. Any other discussion? Move that change.
I'll make that as a motion then.
Second.
That's been moved and seconded, and Ms. Gomez is showing how that change would read in the title as the measure's proposed staff draft title is projected on the screen in the room. Amendment to the Colorado Constitution through Article 30 concerning, et cetera. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any further changes to the staff draft? I do think this is the staff draft, and even with this change, I think it's consistent with the title that we set for number one. And so I think it's good that we are consistent. I guess I'll go ahead and make a motion that the board adopt the staff draft as amended.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. And that concludes action on number 37. The time is 2:08 p.m. Okay. The next item on our agenda is 2009-2010, number 28, plain language law. Then we have, why don't you go ahead and identify yourself for the record. I assume you're representing the proponent. I don't have my sign-up sheet yet. Go ahead.
Yes, my name is Robert McGuire, and I represent the proponents.
Thank you.
In fact, I should clarify, I'm an attorney, so when I say I represent, I usually mean as I'm representing them in an official capacity. I am a proponent of the
issue. Oh, okay. Thank you for that clarification. Are there any questions for Mr. McGuire about the proposal? I do, but I don't know.
Go ahead.
Well, I think one question, I think the way I was reading the measure, I think I was probably misreading it. In the first paragraph, the language says that, any exercise will be void unless basically every law that it changes is expressed entirely in plain language. The first read that is that it already had to be in plain language, but I think what you mean is I think the measure is saying any law that it changes after that amendment or that change has to be in plain language. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. The concept here is that when the legislative power is exercised to create, amend, or extend a law, rule, or regulation, that the result of that exercise of legislative power must be in plain language.
And what's the size of, I mean, it's referring to the law that it changes. And so if, I think I saw the review and comment memo was asking this question about how big a context are we talking about? If a definition is amended, for example, and is it the entire body of law that that definition applies to, or help me understand that?
Well, I think the intent would be for the court, if it came before a court, to make the decision on the scope of the application of this section. In the example that was given in the review and comment memo, one word of a definition was changed in a larger statute, presumably it would just be that tiny section that would be invalid under this.
And I'm sorry, you said what?
Presumably it would be the tiny section that had been changed if that section was not in plain language.
So just in my example, just that definition?
Yes, that would be the intent of the proponents. Okay. Of course, it would be subject to interpretation by the courts.
Thank you. And maybe one other question that I think also was perhaps raised in the review and comment memo. What it seems like there's some types of laws that are hard to put in at the level of plain language, eighth grade level, I believe.
Should I mean, be 12th grade, hopefully.
What was it?
Should hopefully be 12th grade level.
12th grade, sorry. Yeah. but, for example, legal descriptions or scientific terms, things that someone might not understand at a 12th grade level. How would the legislature comply with that?
Well, I think the concept here is that the language of the law needs to be readily understandable to someone who is at the 12th grade level. That doesn't mean that the concept expressed by the law needs to be a simple concept. So, for example, I think the review and comment memo gave the example of a description of a complex special district, the boundary description of a complex special district. Our position is that if it is possible to state in English in a way that is legally enforceable, it should be possible to state it at a reading level that can be correctly understood by somebody with a high school education. And so we're cognizant of the concern expressed in the review and comment memo, but we don't think that it actually has as much merit as it might appear at first glance.
Okay. Other questions for Mr. McGuire? Ms. Eubanks?
Mr. McGuire, would it be a correct assumption that by the reference to any exercise of the legislative power that it includes the initiatives as well as legislation that's proposed by the General Assembly?
No, our view is that the initiative process is carved out in Article 5, I believe it is, of the Constitution. But in any event, there's already a statutory requirement that initiatives and referenda be proposed in plain and clearly expressed language. So even if this did apply, we don't think it would change the law in any way.
Okay, you might want to look at Section 1 of Article 5 because I believe that it reserves the legislative power to the citizens in regard to the initiative power. So the language may be very similar to the terminology you use. Because of the reference to rule and regulation, I assume then it also refers to administrative promulgation of rules?
To the extent that those are delegations by the legislature of legislative power, then it does apply to those. But to the extent they're executive exercises of executive power, it would not apply.
So only with rules and regulations that the legislature has authorized?
Well, to the extent that those rules and regulations are exercises of delegated legislative power, then yes.
Can you give me examples of each category?
Well, I think we may be getting a bit into the merits of the measure, but I think there's case law certainly that differentiates between executive power and legislative power that has been delegated. I think if it would help the board, I could come back with some references. I don't have them off the top of my head.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. McGuire? Not, then I'll turn to the question of single subject compliance.
Actually, I do have one question. I'm sorry. I was just trying to figure out if it had been answered, and maybe it has. Is the idea that if the legislature wishes to change some law or to change a or to somehow overrule an executive regulation or something like that, that they have to essentially and assume that the current law is not in not in plain language. They have to essentially rewrite the whole thing that they want to change and write the whole thing in plain language, as opposed to they can't just say, well, our new act is in what we're doing today is in plain language and it alters part of this other statute. They have to go back and rewrite the entire other statute at the same time.
Well, I think that question gets a little bit at the same issue that that Mr. Hobbs raised earlier, which is the scope of the law, rule, or regulation that must be expressed in plain language following an exercise of legislative power. Our view, and perhaps this is a good opportunity for me to just sort of explain the general concept here. The general concept here is that as the legislature legislates, or as legislative power is exercised through delegation, the law that is changed or created or extended through, for example, the continuation of a law after a sunset, the idea is that the code would, over time, be converted into a plain language document because the exercise in each case, each rule, regulation, or law that it touched would have to be in plain language after it had been touched in order to continue to be, to exist as changed. And to the extent that it wasn't in plain language, the exercise that affected the amendment or passed the new law, the exercise itself would be void. And so therefore, if, for example, and this touches on another example raised in the review and comment memo, if there was a law on the books currently that was not written in plain language under the terms of this amendment, and that law was amended through an act of the legislature which produced a changed version which was also not in plain language, what would be void would be the amendment. And so therefore the law would continue in existence as it was prior to the amendment. So the gist of this is that each time the code is changed going forward, what is changed has to be in plain language, and otherwise the act making the change would be void.
Right. So if the legislature passes a law that is itself in plain language and changes 10 things, and 9 of them it does a good job on, and does it in plain language, but the 10th it fails to fix, and the 10th thing remains in jargon or whatever you want to call it, non-plain language, the whole thing is invalid and all 10 things revert back to their prior language until the legislature fixes it, even the things that were fixed, in your view.
I think that's accurate. So if there was some kind of omnibus legislation which touched on a number of different subjects, the incentive obviously for the legislature is to either deal with it piece by piece in order to sort of bulletproof any changes that are made, to get it all right at the beginning, because otherwise the act that changes a number of different things, the act would be void under this.
And the enforcement mechanism, though, would only allow someone who was subject to that 10th part that I, in my example, that was not correctly done. They're the only people who could bring a suit under this to have it redone. So people who are subject to the other 9 things, wouldn't be able to use this to throw those provisions out just because the 10th thing that doesn't really affect them isn't in plain language. I mean, you have to actually be subject to the part that's that was not corrected.
Okay. Yeah, and that's correct. And we think that that's consistent with the general concept of standing and the fact that a person affected by a law should be the person who has standing to bring a challenge. To the extent someone is subject to the other 9 components of an act that are all in plain language, they wouldn't really have standing under this to bring any suit.
Okay.
Any other questions? If not, then let's move on to the question of single subject. Mr. McGuire, how would you describe the single subject? We're required to express it in the title, and that's...
Sure. Well, we believe the single subject would be plain language lawmaking.
Any discussion by the board about the single subject? Seems to me that that it is a single subject, something along the lines of what Mr. McGuire stated, so... I guess I'll go ahead and make a motion that the board find that the measure comprises a single subject and that we proceed to set a title.
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff draft. Mr. McGuire, have you had a chance to look at the staff draft, and do you have any comments?
Yes, I do, and I do have comments.
Go ahead.
Well, we understand that the purpose of the title and the submission clause is to correctly and fairly express the true intent and meaning of the amendment. And I've identified a number of different issues, 6 issues actually, that where we don't believe that this draft accurately and fairly expresses the intent. We think actually a couple of places it's not actually accurate, and in a couple of others, it fails to reflect things that are central features of the initiative. So before I get into that, I ought to just flag, we were very pleased with the summary of the initiative that was put forward in the review and comment memo by the same office that drafted this. We think that the review and comment memo very accurately summarized the amendment, and I'm happy to go through each of the points that we have with this draft, but I would just like to flag for the board's consideration that I would also like to suggest that the board consider a version based more significantly on the draft from the review and comment memo.
Okay, and I'm looking at the review and comment memo. Is that the section that's the purpose section?
Yes, it's in paragraph 1. It's got 4 different subpoints: A, B, C, and D.
Okay.
We think that adopting the standard syntax of one of these titles and just collapsing A, B, C, and D together would be a very fair summary of the amendment. And since it was produced by the Office of Legislative Legal Services, we were hopeful that it would be something that they would consider to be accurate as well.
I'm open to sort of, if we can sort of, you're looking for this, Ceci's looking to project on the screen the view and comment memo.
And if it would aid the board, I actually have brought copies of what I would propose.
Yeah, that'd be good.
May I approach the board?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And just so I may explain for the record, what I've handed you is 2 exhibits. The first one is Exhibit 2. Which sets out the summary from the review and comment memo by itself at the top, along with a word count, followed by the title that has been proposed for this meeting, and then lastly the wording of the proposed amendment. That's in Exhibit 2. And in Exhibit 3 is our preference for an amendment of the description from the review and comment memo to show how that might be turned into a ballot title.
Thank you. Okay. Well, maybe give us a moment to kind of look at this.
If it would aid the board, I also have a copy of the review and comment memo itself that sets these out in context.
Okay. I think, and I have a copy here also. Yeah, it says he has it. She can show it on the screen as well. I'll make it an initial comment. I mean, I'm open to going direction that the proponents suggest. I think two things that occur to me that I might want to modify if we do that. One is I think we need to clearly express the single subject, I think the Exhibit 3 maybe doesn't really express a single subject, and I would probably be more interested in doing something like an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning plain language lawmaking, or, you know, which we can deal with, but concerning a subject and in connection therewith, voiding in its entirety, et cetera, and then list the major features of the measure. And if we were to do something like that, then I think we might be able to shorten it a little bit. I'm not sure that, for example, the clause that says further clarifying the standards for determining blah blah blah, I'm not sure that adds much. So that might bear some discussion whether we could shorten the title, because that's one of the standards the statute sets out for us, is to be brief. And so, but the big picture here is I'm open to what the proponents are suggesting. Not sure how the other board members. I mean, it's sort of a threshold question. Do we work, start trying to amend the staff draft, but with kind of what direction in mind?
May I just respond briefly?
Go ahead.
We would be fine with that change. I think that's an improvement. It does put the single subject in, and yet it includes the structure and the description that's already there. Regarding dropping the further clarifying clause,
mm-hmm.
I understand that not every provision of the amendment needs to be stated in the title. We do think that the standards for determining whether something is plain language are central to the amendment, but obviously we recognize the title board has the authority to determine what should be in the title. And if something does need to come out, I agree with you that would be the most likely candidate.
Okay, thank you. Discussion by the board?
I'm fine with trying to incorporate more of the approach of the summary from the review and comment. I agree with you, Mr. Hobbs, in terms of the concern of having the statement of single subject I think we need to do that, and I'm not convinced on the Exhibit 3 version that that is what I would view as the statement of single subject. I think it needs to be broad or something along the lines that as it's currently phrased in the staff draft. But I think that we could take the staff draft and easily incorporate the concepts that, or, you know, I mean, it's half dozen one or the other. You can take Exhibit 3 and work with it, but then you're going to have to change and pull over the statement of single subject and move the voiding clause down to follow after in connection therewith. But I'm fine with doing that. I also agree. I understand that the standards for this requirement are important, but to just say that it clarifies the standards isn't very helpful for the voters in deciding whether to vote for or against the measure. And that's, I think, generally why we don't include those types of statements. But in terms of the other provisions that that you're suggesting to be included, I'm fine with going that way, whichever draft you want to work off of.
Mr. Domenico?
I think I agreed with everything you both said, which would, I think, mean that the way to proceed would be to take what the proponent has offered and try to add a little bit and see what we could take away.
Sounds great. I mean, still working from the staff draft and modifying
sure.
it as we go. Is that all right?
That, yeah.
Well, I'll take a first run at a change to the staff draft for purposes of expressing a single subject. And I don't really know what it should be, but I would like to have it as short as possible. The staff draft is kind of a narrative. I mean, the expression of the single subject is a requirement that any exercise, et cetera, which is really, I think, is really one of the features. And I guess I would suggest something similar to what Mr. McGuire suggested, an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning, plain language and legislative actions. What was your phrase, plain?
Plain language lawmaking.
Plain language lawmaking. It just seems a little clipped to me, but I don't feel strongly about it. I mean, the plain language is to me the heart of this. Plain language in lawmaking or something like that. Feeling on the part of the board members? Plain language in the exercise of legislative power is a little broader because
That would be within our intent, yes. That would match our intent.
I'm a little uncomfortable with the term lawmaking because I'm just, to me, I'm just not sure what that conveys to the voters. I don't know whether they would think, well, that includes rules and regulations, those sorts of things. And so whether more along the lines of referring to legislative power, I think maybe is a little bit more helpful, but.
I think they both suffer from the same problem, which is that as the measure recognizes, legislative power, lawmaking goes beyond just statutes. On the other hand, it's accurate. I don't know if your average 12th grade high school graduate would understand what legislative power means, since we fight about it in court all the time. On the other hand, they should understand what each word means, even if kind of not every application of it is obvious. So I think I'm okay with, frankly, either one of them. we may be on a little bit more solid ground with the plain language in the exercise of legislative power, although I'm not sure why we should be. But it does seem that that, I guess the reason we are is that that's just, lawmaking is a new word. Legislative power is taken actually from the measure itself, and so it's not inaccurate in that sense, at least. So maybe that's preferable.
Shall we try then, Ceci, concerning plain language in the exercise of legislative power? But your suggestion?
I think so. Yeah.
Yes, I think so. Let's just go ahead and put comma and in connection therewith, comma. Pick that up later, but.
Excuse me, if I may.
Go ahead.
I just wonder if there should be words between the word concerning and the word plain, something like concerning a requirement for use of plain language.
Either, as you suggest, or maybe another option would be concerning a plain language requirement for, or something, but there needs to be something.
Although I should point out now we're actually getting back to one of the issues that I had with the legislative draft here, which is the plain language requirement doesn't apply to the exercise itself. It applies to what results from the exercise of legislative power.
Well, what if you just say the use of plain language?
Barb, is that okay?
Well, just it still, I believe, suffers from the concern that the way the amendment is drafted, plain language doesn't apply to the act of exercising legislative power. It applies to what the legislative power produces. And so that was the basis for using the word lawmaking, although that's a bit of a, that suffers from a bit of the same problem as well.
I don't think
you want
to.
Perhaps you could.
I don't know that you want to say law, rule, or regulation, and I don't know that I can think of a term that easily incorporates those three concepts. I mean, yes, they are all have effect of law, but I don't know that you know, to say the use of plain language in laws enacted through the exercise of legislative power necessarily conveys the concept. I mean, people may think that's purely bills, you know, statutory provisions rather than rules and regulations.
Well, I mean, what the measure is, the problem we're having here is that exercise is both a verb and a noun, right? And what I hear is that you want to, what the measure says is an exercise, any exercise of the legislative power, meaning the noun, the thing they produce, is void. And you're concerned that this suggests that it's concerned with the way, with the process, the verb exercising the legislative power. I mean, my usual way of trying to solve when people are concerned, we're not accurately reflecting what's going on is to use the language of the measure itself. What if we change the before exercise to the word that's used in the measure itself, which is any? So concerning the use of plain language in any exercise of legislative power. I mean, there's the inherent ambiguity in the word exercise, but that's in the measure itself.
And just from our perspective, not to hammer on the same point, but the plain language requirement doesn't apply to the exercise itself. So, for example, if an act is written in language that is, the language of a bill, which includes insertions and deletions and references to sections of code, that exercise is not covered by the plain language requirement under this amendment. Instead, what is covered is the product of those changes.
But isn't the product also an exercise of legislative power? I mean, technically you're right, but from the point of view of a non-technical reader, it is the product that is.
It may be within the universe of what constitutes an exercise of legislative power, but my concern is if we don't make a distinction in the title, we may wind up producing something misleading because the text of the amendment only deals with exercises that produce something that's not in plain language.
But, and maybe I'm being a little argumentative about this, but it seems like that loses sight of what the goal is. I mean, you're saying, I think, the proponents are saying measures that are currently written in complex technical language are going to stand. But as the legislature goes through and makes amendments, they're going to have to be rewritten so that the product is what actually ends up, the goal is to get the resulting statutes in plain language.
I think you're both right. The more I think about it, what the measure really does, the measure does a lot more than what the way we have it written now says. Because you could, even if everything the legislature does now is in perfectly plain language, if it changes something and leaves in whatever it changes some jargon, then it's void. And so it is a little bit broader than requiring the use of plain language in going forward. It requires looking at whatever you're changing and making and amending that if necessary. I guess it's really the second half of the first sentence of the measure itself is the most important part. And we've been focusing on the first half of that sentence, I guess is what I'm saying.
Let me take a completely different run at it. I'll probably be shot down on this, but I just want to get this off my chest. So, we're about, once we express a single subject, we're about to say what the requirement really is, just in the next line. And I'm assuming that's going to be, we need to make that accurate. And I guess I'm wondering about just simply saying in the single subject something like concerning plain language in legislative matters or plain language in legislation. I mean, I'm going towards simple, and then we'll say in connection therewith, requiring that any exercise, et cetera.
May I respond?
I'm sorry, I guess it's, by the way, concerning plain language and legislative measures or something like that. But go ahead, Mr. McGuire.
I like the essence of what you're saying. I think, though, that it's more what you've stated is more limited than what the measure does just because I do think legislative matters is a phrase that's not tied to what the initiative discusses. I think what you've said, substituting instead of legislative matters, laws, rules, and regulations, I think that would cover it from our perspective.
Well, in rules and regulations, would they be equivalent terms? Could we eliminate one of them?
Well, we've drawn a lot of this from case law, so we assume there's a distinction between some of these terms.
Where I'm going is in legislation and regulations. I mean, is there really anything added? I understand the language of the measure needs to cover all bases.
Right.
But if there really isn't any clear difference,
I think that would make sense, actually. Given that this is a title and not the text of the measure, I think that does make sense.
We try to avoid conjunctions in the expression of single subject because it looks like two subjects. Laws and regulations. Thanks.
Well, I'm where you are in terms of I don't like to have multiple things, nouns, subjects in a statement of single subject for fear that that opens it up to a challenge on that basis. Coming from the legislative perspective with bills, generally we wouldn't, in terms of the single subject requirement that's imposed on bills, we would not have a title that says laws, rules, and regulations on that same basis. Now, there are some exceptions. Sales and use tax, because they're usually viewed as being one and the same. I think here it's a little different because you may just have a standalone rule or regulation. I mean, it's not all of it in every instance where there's a change. And so I'm concerned about having a series, perhaps even two, in terms of law or regulation, in the statement of single subject. But if the proponent's willing to take that risk, then we can go that direction.
How about legislative plain language?
How about plain language lawmaking? Now, I think we're fine with the conjunction. I'm pretty sure that those would be three objects, not subjects, in grammatical terms. I think it is accurate. I don't think that it. Either the measure has more than one subject because it affects laws, rules, and regulations. In which case, what we say in the title doesn't matter, or saying so in the title shouldn't change it. And so my view is that if it's accurate, just because it affects three things, three different types of laws, I don't have a problem expressing it that way. So I sort of liked the way Mr. Hobbs suggested with the proposed amendment, I think, which was plain language and laws, rules, and regulations.
And I guess I'm thinking that's okay. And I normally try to avoid the conjunctions because I'm sort of old school, like Ms. Eubanks is talking about, as far as the rules of legislative drafting for bills before the General Assembly, but I actually think this is a little closer to the sales and use tax example, because in fact there is kind of a unifying concept of exercise of the legislative power. That's what I think we're struggling to find a single term to cover that, and I kind of think that laws and regulations are, and once we say laws and anything, I'm okay with laws, rules, and regulations, I guess, is kind of one thing. They're exercises of legislative authority or exercises of legislative power.
Right. I mean, that was sort of the point I was trying to make. If listing them in the single subject is, if it's accurate, then the concern to me, if there's a concern, it should be that if the two of you are actually concerned that listing them that way somehow creates a single subject problem, we should probably revisit the single subject question, because that's what it does. And if doing all three of those things is a problem, then it's a single subject problem. I don't view it as a problem at all, for the reason you just said. They're all just kind of different ways of saying the same. I mean, you're right, I think. Depending on how you're defining law, they all could be subsumed within the term law, but probably many people wouldn't think of a regulation as a law, so it just clarifies a potential ambiguity, which in my view is a good thing. So I think that was where we were headed, was a good place.
And if I could just clarify, I don't have a problem with the single subject. I mean, it's just from a drafting perspective. I mean, we could be drafting a bill that includes, you know, statutory changes and authorizes rules and regulations, whatever, but and I don't believe that would violate single subject requirements for bills right now. But to state that in the title, we generally, as a matter of style, we try to come up with a terminology that incorporates all of that without actually listing it in the title.
Sure.
As a matter of style for.
And what if, but what if the legislature tried to do something like this, which was sort of tie its own hands, but also tie the executive branch's hands and say, all laws shall be, in plain language, as all laws, rules, and regulations from here on out shall be written in plain language. How would the legislature
write the
or
title?
You write the title for that?
Well, I'd try mightily, first of all, to come up with a term that would incorporate all three concepts without actually stating them in the title. Whether that's possible or not, I think that's what we're struggling with right now. But, you know, if you want to talk about, you know, use of plain language in laws, rules, and regulations resulting from the exercise of state legislative power, we can do that.
Well, I guess just for the sake of moving us forward, to see who has a change of heart, maybe I guess I would propose single subject to be concerning plain language in laws, rules, and regulations. Mr. Domenico, as he puts it all up there, I think that's consistent with what you were saying.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. One thing Ms. Eubanks brought up that we can get to after we resolve the...
Whether you have to have something resulting from the exercise of legislative power? I mean...
I don't think you do. That's what I was getting at. As long as we're all comfortable with that, about...
I mean, these items, laws, rules, and regulations, are the product of the exercise of legislative power.
Right.
And so, I mean, one, I think it's important we've got to say state legislative power, because this doesn't affect municipalities, counties, other local governments. And so it just seems like you have to say something about legislative power. But they're resulting from whatever phrase you want to use. It just seems like it's not going to be in laws, rules, and regulations in the exercise of state legislative power. I mean, it's, they're the product, they're the result, they're the...
Nay. I agree that we should say something about it being limited to the state. And the easy way to do that would just be to put the word state
laws
before laws. I don't think that in the title it's necessary to say any more than that, frankly, because I think this accurately captures the subject. I think how the measure affects that subject needs to be explained more, but that's what the rest of it is for. And I think the business about legislative power is not really the subject, it's the means of carrying out, it's the means of affecting this subject. So I think I would, I kind of like that as the single subject statement, I guess is what I'm saying.
I'll go ahead and make that motion then, that the single subject be expressed as shown on the screen.
Second.
For the record, that would read an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning plain language in state laws, rules, and regulations. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. So then, and in connection therewith, what comes next?
What's our position on the serial comma before the and in regulation?
Oh.
I personally usually use it, but I can't remember what our...
I think we do. We set off. We have a comma between and in.
Yes. I think and comma in connection therewith.
Oh, well, that's not what I was talking about. But I was talking about the and... But between rules and regulations.
Oh, you're right. I think we use a comma.
But there, too. Yeah,
thank you.
Sure.
Now, I think, Mr. McGuire, your suggestion then is move to voiding.
Yes. Our suggestion would then be to use and in connection therewith voiding in its entirety and then so on as set out in Exhibit 3.
I think that's a good suggestion, and actually it has saved ourselves some trouble because in connection therewith is already up there, but
right.
Either way.
So do we strike lines 3-4? Is that all going to go away, or are we going to move it?
That, my view is that all goes away.
Okay. Go in and in connection therewith, voiding any law, rule, or regulation. Et cetera.
If I may, although I may have misunderstood, but I had understood that the decision was, or at least the discussion had centered around, instead of working off of the wording here, to work off the wording in Exhibit 3 taken from the summary in the review and comment memo. So, for example, where that says, where the staff draft here says voiding any law, rule, or regulation, the summary taken from the review and comment memo says voiding in its entirety, and proceeds from there, any exercise of the legislative power, ...
I think that's fine.
Jesse, after the word voiding, is that where your cursor is? Voiding in its entirety? The exercise? In its entirety, any exercise of the legislative power. Of the state. Do we need that occurs after December 1, 2010? That's one of the things I wanted to raise, is that can we, it seems to me we could leave that out.
Our only concern with leaving that out is that then this might become retroactive. If there are existing statutes that people are subject to that are not in plain language, someone would be able to go back and void previous acts of the legislature. So, you know, to permit the legislature to function on this basis, we thought it needed to have a start date.
Eubanks.
And while I don't disagree with that, I mean, you deal with that in the text of the measure. I don't know that it matters in the title.
I'm sorry. I get confused whether we're talking about the title.
I think Mr. Hobbs was, in terms of the question of, is that such an important detail that it needs to be in the title? And probably not.
Just to be clear, we're not going to ever make any changes to the measure itself. So we're always, I mean, we may have questions about it, but any changes we're suggesting are to the title. My view is that normally the dates don't matter, and I thought about getting rid of it here too, but for the reason the proponent stated, I actually thought that here it is material that this is. And it's a little bit of it is the measure, the way it operates is a little bit counterintuitive.
Well, instead of the date, would it meet Mr. McGuire's concern if we said voiding in its entirety any future exercise of the legislative power? And still leave out the date?
I think that's fairly accurate, although I question whether it might be considered misleading, given that there will be a 30-day window. Acts could conceivably be taken that wouldn't be covered.
I mean, as a practical matter, I mean, I think generally the board's operated on this assumption is that, you know, we know that measures will become effective upon proclamation of the governor, which is about December 31st, probably. And we've usually not stated the date unless something out of the ordinary, you know, like a delayed effective date or something like that. I mean, and so I just, like I say, it will take effect around that time anyway. It's kind of where I'm coming from, and I just hate to get locked into a date. I mean, it's an important part of the text, because regardless of when the measure becomes effective, I think the text is saying, this is what it applies to. I mean, I suppose it's even if the measure doesn't become effective until January 1st or January 10th or December 15th, this is what it's going to apply to. But it's not, I just don't know that we need to say the date, but I don't know.
I would suggest we defer to the proponent's wishes.
Okay. I'm okay with that.
I would leave it in anyway, so
okay.
That's fine.
So, Ceci, then continue on. Legislative power of the state that occurs after December 31st, 2010. That occurs after December 31st, 2010. Unless every
so strike,
they, oh, just strike,
strike
the entirety.
In its entirety, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I think you need a changes before creates on line 6. We're going to make a series of 3, so it's changes, comma, then creates, comma, and then strike simply and clearly worded.
excuse me, if I may interject, instead of amends, I believe it should be or extends. That wording there was intended to capture laws that are extended beyond sunset.
Okay. Yes. And then I think there would be a semicolon after plain language, where language is dangling on line 8.
Can I just question whether the current changes help or hurt? I think they're both fine, frankly, the current version of sort of incorporating the definition of plain language and then the proposed change that kind of says expressed in plain language, defining plain language. But it seemed to read a little bit easier. A few fewer words in the staff draft, but I'm okay if we just change it too.
So you would keep the simply and clearly worded and have the sentence go on to, or the phrase go on and to through read and understand, semicolon?
Yes. Or at least I would suggest we consider it. I'm okay either way.
Did you follow that, Mr. McGuire?
I believe Mr. Domenico is saying to leave the struck out four words there, and that would suffice as a summary of the clarification. Yeah, my only concern with that as a proponent is that I think the definition of plain language is somewhat central to the to the amendment. It's not only that it be worded with simplicity and clarity, that the average person graduating from public high school can read and understand it, but that they can understand it without confusion or doubt about its correct meaning. Because there's a difference, we believe, between understanding the words and understanding the correct meaning of law. So we think that it would be important,
Well, we could certainly add that part of it, and my question was more to whether to separate the definition out into its own semicolon separated clause. And as I said, I don't have a strong feeling. So unless someone else cares, I'm happy to keep going. I don't want to delay us unnecessarily.
Well, I think I like where Mr. Domenico is going, but I'd like to sort of hear how that sounds, because I think then it would read, is expressed entirely in, simply and clearly worded plain language that an average high school graduate can read and understand without confusion or doubt about the correct meaning, semicolon.
Right.
Okay to me, but Mr. McGuire, if that really doesn't sit well with you,
it doesn't sit poorly with me. I think it's just paraphrasing the language, and I think the review and comment memo was a little bit more verbatim faithful to the amendment by saying the same thing. So, I do think it's important to add the part about the ability to read and understand without confusion or doubt about the correct meaning, but I'm not strongly opposed to using this formulation here instead of the worded with simplicity and clarity formulation. So if the sense is that this reads clearer, we're open to that.
I'm happy either way. I just thought I'd bring it up.
I guess I'd go ahead and suggest that. Let's just go ahead and then add after understand.
May I just interject, just as one consideration, Mr. Domenico had mentioned the possibility of including a defining plain language clause, which is what's actually set out in Exhibit 3. I just wonder if, at this point, your first semicolon clause has gotten rather long, and it might break it up if you put it in a separate defining clause.
Yeah, I mean, those are sort of, I don't know which one's clear, frankly. And it may be that just saying expressed in plain language and defining it is easier to read. But either way, why don't we go ahead and add that language, and then that's going to be in there either way.
So Ceci, then where the cursor is without confusion or doubt about the correct meaning. About the correct meaning, semicolon.
And I think you need to take the semicolon out, yeah, after language, yeah.
That's one approach, and then the other approach would be to split it into a definitions clause. I think is Mr. McGuire's preference.
Would be, yes.
If that's the preference, I really don't feel strongly about it at all, and I'm happy to go back. All it would require, I think, is putting that semicolon back. Well, actually, I think it deletes a couple words simply and clear. It's clearly worded. Mm-hmm. Putting in a semicolon and then say defining plain language as language that, et cetera. So that's fine with me.
I think Ceci knows how to do it. Yeah, strike that simply and clearly worded. Put a semicolon back in after and then defining, quote, plain language as, end quote, plain language, end quote, as language that, and then, well, just as language, I guess.
That you're fine. Up right there.
Right there?
Yeah.
Oh, let's see. That is, I guess, we really. That as language that is worded with simplicity and clarity. Finding plain language as language that is worded with simplicity and clarity.
Yeah.
And clarity. That kind of what you had in mind, Mr. McGuire? Well, I guess let me just, I don't know that we've taken any votes since the single subject, but if everybody's comfortable with what we have right now, I guess I would go ahead and move the changes that we have made in lines 2 through 10 up to the semicolon.
Second.
As shown on the board. Sorry, is that a second?
Sorry.
Any further discussion?
I thought you were done.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. And I think, Mr. McGuire, you had a little different approach on the enforcement using this review and comment memo.
Yes, and I'm looking. What our preferred approach is just the fourth point D from the review and comment memo. Oh, actually, wait. Are we on the point C, the further clarifying clause, or are we on point D?
I would suggest omitting that. There's consensus there. And then, so we, yes, I think we would be down to D.
And I would, in that case, I would just ask for the record to confirm that the board's considered that there is reference to cross-references and defined terms that we would then be leaving out of the title.
I think of that as kind of a detail that's falls logically under the plain language requirement. Cross-references are covered, for example, in the plain language requirement.
Yeah, my view is that the language that further clarifying is not helpful. If we really think that the section of the measure about cross-references and definitions is material and not conveyed, like independently material beyond what's already in there, then we should say something about it that actually suggests what we're talking about. But the current draft, or actually the suggested draft taken from the comment memo, I don't think is very helpful. But I would be open to considering whether we should add something about cross-references and definitions.
I don't view it as good as a significant detail. Sounds contradictory, but I don't know that it's, again, it's plain language, and it's important to the language of the measure to say, here's how, in keeping with that requirement of plain language, here's how cross-references have to be handled, defined terms have to be handled. Furtherance of the one of the standards is not things that might be surprising to voters. Surprising the way cross references and defined terms, then waited to go the other way. But
and I'm afraid that for some voters, they won't know what a cross reference is if you included that kind of information. So I agree with Mr. Hobbs. I don't think that it's that major of a component. I agree that it's important in terms of how you've defined what your requirement means, but I don't believe that it needs to be in the title in terms of all the details. And I agree with Mr. Domenico that I don't think this phrase at all is helpful in terms of just saying that you're clarifying the standards, because then again the voters don't know how those standards are being clarified.
It just my reading of the measure, and I think it's confirmed to some extent by the use of the language clarifying, is that even without those two provisions, your view, my reading of the rest of the measure is that that's how, even without those two measures, those two provisions, the rest of the measure should still be interpreted that way. You just wanted to clarify, make sure there was no argument about, well, this is just a cross-reference or this is just a definition. You're just trying to make clear that this is how this applies in these two specific circumstances, right?
I think that's
that right?
Yeah.
So that's the way I read it, and I think that the title as we have it now captures that, and so I'm not sure that a clarification or an effort to avoid a potential confusion is necessary to add that in there, in that I think that all those say is more specifically that the same thing that the first sentence says, which is if you change or amend something, needs to be the thing you change and amend has to be in plain language, including anything you cross-reference or define. So I think we're all in agreement then that it's not material in the sort of in the sense that we use it here
In other words, the kind of thing that would get a title thrown out or should get a title thrown out.
Yeah.
I think we do, without discussing that, we do convey to the typical voter all the material terms.
I'd suggest then maybe we go to this lines 10 through 13, and perhaps incorporate some of the suggestions from Mr. McGuire. That's acceptable to the board. So that.
Can I ask Mr. McGuire a question? Going there, in terms of that last phrase, obviously the language that you've proposed in your Exhibit 3 differs in some respects to the staff draft. In other respects, it's almost identical. And so I'm wondering if you could sort of focus on those differences, obviously allowing versus authorizing, whether you're referring to a lawsuit versus to sue in any district court, and then in terms of how you refer to the plain language requirement, whether you want to refer to the requirements of this amendment versus how it appears in the staff draft, and then in terms of the phrasing of the recovery of costs and attorney's fees. Really, is there anything so different between those two versions that you feel strongly about that we need to change?
If I can take a second just to compare them side by
sure.
side, please.
And I ask that question just because it seems like they're very similar in many respects, and so whether we have to do it all or not.
Just a couple of points. The first is that I think it's important to express the forum, to express the jurisdiction of any district court to handle one of these enforcement suits. That is something that we think is central to the intent, which is to make it easy for people to enforce this. Someone in Gunnison, for example, might not want to be compelled to come to Denver to sue to enforce something when they could sue out there. So the jurisdiction point, the jurisdiction of any district court to handle one of these suits is something that we think is material.
So the key thing is it's any district court. That's really the key thing. It's not that it's district court. It's any district court. So then it'll end of line 11, instead of saying to bring a lawsuit to enforce, then we could say to sue in any district court. I'll go ahead and suggest that.
Second. No, I guess we're not
the motion.
Okay, sorry.
Seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. So it's right. Strike bring a lawsuit. Strike that. Assert sue in any district court. Sorry. SUE in any district court. Any other changes, Mr. McGuire?
No, I believe we would be indifferent to the distinction between authorizing and allowing.
Okay. Thanks.
Since we removed the reference to lawsuit, I was wondering where it appears later, where we're talking about the awarding of costs and attorney's fees if the lawsuit is successful. Could we just strike the reference to lawsuit so that they can bring, and if successful, receive? It refers back to the person.
Sounds good to me.
I think you still need the is. Oh, no, you're right. Sorry. Now that I read it, if successful, receive an award of costs and reasonable attorney's fees.
So moved. Second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any other changes to the staff draft?
I would just confirm, I just for the record wanted to confirm the board's sense that that last paragraph or that last clause there is not going to be misleading in the sense that it might make people think that if they're subject to a law not expressed in plain language that wasn't the product of an exercise of legislative power after December 31st, that they can sue.
Well, my view is that there was a touch of ambiguity in the measure itself that is reflected in the way the title reads. But I think that they're both clear enough on that point that it's the new, it's you can enforce the provisions of this measure, which have to do with new laws and not just if you're subject to an old law that isn't affected by this yet. So I'm okay with that.
If there aren't any other suggested amendments, Ceci, maybe we'll flip it so that we can see what we've got. And for the record, I'm just going to go ahead and read it while we think about whether there's any other changes. Then the title then, as amended so far, would read, an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning plain language in state laws, commas, rules, commas, and regulations, commas, comma, and comma in connection therewith, comma, voiding in its entirety any exercise of the legislative power of the state that occurs after December 31, 2010, comma, and there's a comma after December 31, unless every law, comma, rule, comma, or regulation that it changes, comma, creates, comma, or extends is expressed entirely in plain language, semicolon, defining, quote, plain language, end quote, as language that is worded with simplicity and clarity, and that an average high school graduate can read and understand without confusion or doubt about the correct meaning, semicolon, and authorizing a person subject to a law, comma, rule, comma, or regulation that is not expressed entirely in plain language to sue in any district court to enforce the plain language requirement and, comma, if successful, comma, receive an award of costs and reasonable attorney's fees paid by the state, period. Any further changes to the staff draft as amended? Not, then I'll go ahead and make a motion that the board adopt the staff draft as so amended, with the understanding that the same changes would be made in the ballot title and submission clause that begins with what is now displayed as line 11.
Second.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. And that concludes action on number 28. And the time is 3:27 p.m. And we're adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.